ask Peter to be gentle on time. As he mentioned, we will be talking a little bit about some of our experiences in transferring our domestic best practices into the international arena. Do not have any relationships to disclose. For those of you who are not familiar with Susan G. Komen for the Cure, we're a breast cancer organization founded in 1982 as a result of a relationship with Nancy Brinker and her sister Susan G. Komen, who was diagnosed with breast cancer in 1977. At a time when there isn't a lot of relevant information about breast cancer at all, and at a time when women just felt the stigma, they felt like they were lonely and ashamed of having breast cancer. So Nancy G. Brinker made a promise to her sister to make every effort to change that reality for women facing breast cancer worldwide. In these efforts, we learned that there were some challenges, obviously, in the beginning for Susan G. Komen, just in Dallas as our headquarters. Nancy Brinker tried to get sponsorships early on, and companies didn't want to be associated with cancer, much, you know, let alone breast cancer itself. Even the Dallas Morning News, when we tried to put an ad in a newspaper for our Race for the Cure, which is our signature event, they didn't want breast cancer in that ad. So that just gives you an idea of what the times were like back then. And even women who were breast cancer survivors, they didn't want to be associated with breast cancer. They didn't want that reminder that they had breast cancer. So there were some challenges early on. And we realized going into the international arena that those challenges translated as well. Women still felt the stigma. There's just a lack of knowledge for women. They felt that they weren't empowered to get help for breast cancer, and they just wanted to keep it a secret. So in our mission to end breast cancer forever, we've decided that we're not just going to take the approach of working with just advocacy or just by funding research or just by providing grants to the community. We want to do everything as much as we can across the board, and so that we can do it for every woman and man facing breast cancer or facing the disease in the world. One of the things that we learned early on is that we can't do it alone. We must do it in partnership. We need to work with both advocates, leaders, community members, governments, and the social sector everywhere we work. Doesn't matter where, but we need to do it. Most importantly, in the last 30 years, we knew that we needed to build a sustainable network, a network that we could rely on for strong programs for women all over the world. Because where a woman lives shouldn't determine whether she lives. And while we continue to fight with this motto domestically, we're now taking this message globally. It doesn't translate exactly as it does in English everywhere, but it certainly is a message that we carry across to every country that we work. When we look at breast cancer on a global scale, we know that there's still a lot of work ahead of us. As you can see here, a woman is diagnosed every 19 seconds, and one dies every 74 seconds. So that's more than 41 million. If we keep at this rate, more than 41 million in the next 25 years that could potentially be diagnosed. In Latin America, our biggest challenge right now is that 70% of the cancers that are diagnosed at stages 3 and 4, where it's really difficult to cure to treat the disease, especially with the resources available in those regions. So in looking at our best practices, we looked at our experiences over the last 25 years. We have an affiliate network of about 122 affiliates, 119 of those here in the U.S. and 3 international ones. So we decided to take all the positive things that worked for us through these affiliate relationships and modify them and apply them to the international scope. So beginning in 2005, we began with our phase one, which was the education component. It was the component that we were strongest at, and then we moved on to the other phases. And I'll talk about each one of these. Phase one was our initial approach through education, as I mentioned. One of our curriculums, which is called Course for the Cure. We delivered it in 10 countries, Mexico, Costa Rica, Brazil, Panama, Ukraine, Romania, Egypt, Jordan, UAE, and Saudi Arabia. And the Course for the Cure was a curriculum that was developed based on the different modules that we had already shared with our affiliate network here in country. We took the five core modules that we thought would be easily translatable to the international sector, and those modules, as you can see here, are community assessment, awareness, education, advocacy, fundraising, volunteerism. Then we took those components and trained them to build capacity of NGOs in country, in each of those countries that we were working in. Then we took it a step further, and we wanted to help them put those skills that they learned into action by helping them do community needs assessments, helping them understand what a grant application looked like, what they needed to do, and also how to implement different projects, and the last step, which is monitoring and evaluation. Over a seven-year period, we trained and graduated about 1,075 graduates through the Course for the Cure, with 426 of those being specifically in Latin America. So what worked for us and what didn't work in phase one? Coleman made a successful intro into international programming. The community assessments were something, were a key tool that's still very active here domestically for us, and we were able to translate that to the international arena. But, you know, we were able to show that it was very important for the NGOs to follow an evidence-based approach, and for them to collect information that was relevant and will help them to raise funds on their own. But at the same time, it was really difficult for us to get them to commit and to have a buy-in into providing the resources and the personnel to actually accomplish those assessments and funding to accomplish those assessments and to renew them on a biennial basis. We knew that we were able to provide seed grants, and those seed grants allowed different organizations to implement the work that they've learned, and that was very successful amongst most of the groups. And then our most important module was the fundraising. Whether we had NGOs that were lower or higher capacity, they were all able to take part or the full model that we used here in the U.S. And adapt it to the work that they were doing in country. At the same time, we also knew that this was a very ambitious plan, going in to 10 countries with a very small staff, limited resources, and really we didn't have a plan for sustainability. We wanted to share education, but we didn't have an exit strategy. We didn't have a full plan. So that was a mistake on our part. The other thing that didn't work for us is that we had an advocacy model that was a very U.S.-focused advocacy model, and it did not translate well, it still doesn't today, to the international field. So the last thing was that volunteerism is an idea that did not translate well to the Latin America culture, in many of the other countries as well, in the Middle East and in Europe. Europe much more ahead than the other countries, but volunteerism is still a challenge till today. One important step in our transition in phase two was being able to establish a diverse network of leaders and advocates with the goal of convening these groups for training, providing opportunities for network, and also sharing ideas. As I mentioned, you know, as newcomers to Latin America, we primarily focused on working with NGOs. We knew that that was a common place for us as an NGO. We knew that there was information that we could share with those groups. And so we became familiar with the NGOs, and we tried to leverage those relationships to understand, one, the territory, understand what NGOs were willing to work with one another and which ones weren't. We needed to gain the trust of the community. You know, after all, Coleman was a new and foreign name. Some countries know us well, other countries don't know us at all. And most of all, we needed to help the NGOs understand that we were there to share information and not to take over what they were doing. We wanted to share in their successes and enable them. So after 5 years or so of developing relationships at the grassroots level, we decided to dig a little bit deeper into the healthcare system, which is phase three, we'll talk about in a moment. Phase two, what we did well was that we were able to convene groups and identify synergies amongst us. We leveraged our network of partners, and we were able to grow our network successfully. But we still knew that we needed to grow much more. You know, it wasn't enough for us to work with just NGOs and work at the grassroots level. We also had a steering committee concept where we brought in leaders from different groups to try to help us sort of build our work plans in country, but we weren't able to utilize that steering committee well. And so there were different expectations and expectations of grants and things that we did not manage well in the beginning. So the concept just sort of failed in each of the countries that we were in, and we're still trying to determine whether that's something that we want to carry on. So for phase three, we turned things around a little bit. So this happened in early 2011. We decided that we were not just going to focus on education and awareness and prevention in the beginning, but we needed to take the concept of looking at the entire continuum of care. So we needed to take, not only the screening portion, but we needed to look at organizations that were doing work around diagnosis, treatment, and also post-follow-up, follow-up treatment, and then navigation, which is a big issue. So we made a commitment that we were going to address the entire continuum. We transitioned our work plans to reflect this very approach, in that we were not only, again, working with NGOs, but we needed to dive into the healthcare system. We needed to work with hospitals. We needed to work with different organizations, institutions that would help us to address all of these areas and help us to understand what was working. What were the best practices that were already occurring in those countries? What were the gaps that were happening around the continuum, and how were we able to fill those gaps and bring in skills that Komen had as well to help fill in those gaps? And then who were the key players? What were the private institutions? What were the government organizations that were already working around this continuum? In phase three, we have limited our work in Latin America specifically to Brazil, Mexico, and Panama. We're continuing to do awareness education. We're continuing to work on the community profile, but we're also commissioning health systems analyses and working on those, building our work plans based on those analyses. Some of our strategic partners in this effort are Caterpillar Foundation, NCI, WHO, PATH, and also the Breast Health Global Initiative. Some of the examples of the things that we've done to move beyond phase three and also begin integrating with the governments of each of these countries. In Panama, for example, right now we're working with the Ministry of Health and Ministry of Education to improve awareness countrywide and on a national level. Panama is such a small country that we can do that. We can do that successfully. In Mexico, we're also working with the Social Security Institute and as well alongside with NGOs to target specific areas where we need to improve access for women. And in Brazil, as a large country, we've been successful in focusing our work in São Paulo, for example, São Paulo State. We just developed a team for the Northeast, and we are actively working on strengthening our relationships with the government at the federal and state level, which has been a challenge for us. So phase three and four observations so far are that once we established this model and we were clear with what our expectations were and what we wanted to do in the country, we were able to get easier buy-in from the organizations involved. They began to see us as a collaborator, not just as a grantor, and we were able to increase our network from working with NGOs in smaller groups to in a more strategic way, and that was favorable to us. So as you can see here, this is our network strategy and what we decided and what we work off of today. Basically, we begin with the community level capacity building, the grassroots work, where we do training. We still provide seed grants as well as large grants, where we're building community profiles and engaging with the health system. We identify the needs and we share our key messages, and we move on to the meat of what we do, which is building those coalitions, having roundtables where we're talking to different groups about best practices and about the positive things that are working and how can we work together to improve those efforts. And then we are together in one united voice. As Komen, we're seen as an outsider. We're not there to, bring in just what we know and push forward what we know. We want to collaborate with different groups, and we know that that's absolutely important for us to be successful in our work. And so we want to engage the NGOs and different groups and help them move forward as a united voice to reach out to their heads of states, to their ministries, to their first ladies, and get some policy on the board, as well as through our own efforts here domestically, which is where most of our funding comes from. We want to share those best practices with our community here in the U.S. as well as with our Komen international community to continue to bring funding to Latin America. So that's it for me. Thank you very much.